So thanks to Eric for inviting me out. I'm probably the only economist in this entire building, so I feel lonely, but that's okay. As economists, we're usually despised anyway. That's rule of thumb, yeah. So when Eric asked me to come talk about it, about fiber consumption, I've tried to think of a title. And one of the titles that came to mind here was Withern Natural Fiber Consumption. As we'll see in a minute, there's been pretty substantial shifts in consumer use of natural fibers and synthetic fibers over time, and that trend doesn't bode well for natural fibers, at least, or has not bode well for natural fibers. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how natural fiber has been used, what some of those trends are in both man-made and natural fibers. I'll focus a little bit on the apparel market because it's the easiest and it's the most confined in terms of retail data, but we'll talk about fiber consumption in general. Look at a few foreign markets and then sort of discuss some implications going forward. I promise not to speak for 30 minutes. No student of mine would care to have that, and I'm not going to do it to you. This graph sort of shows demonstrates the trends that are occurring in both the natural fiber, in this case cotton, which is the blue line, and the orange line is polyester. Those are the two focus areas. Since 1994, you can see cotton is on a downward trend, polyester is on an upward trend. You see the big drop there around 2008. That was the financial crisis. Both fibers suffered pretty substantially. And interestingly, when you look at that, man-made fiber suffered a bigger loss in use, per capita use, than cotton did during that financial crisis, which tells us a little something about what we talk about the income effect on cotton versus polyester. But since that time, we've been trending downward. Largely, if you look at the 2011, we saw that both of them sort of recovered after the financial crisis, and then polyester rises from there and cotton falls, largely because cotton went to $2 a pound, and the supply chains adjusted their fiber mix in large part in response to that. A lot of times we think about the responsiveness that we have or that companies might have to changes in price. But when we think about supply chains, they tend to be very sticky. So once a decision is made, that tends to stick for an extended period of time. I give a good example when people ask about this, that Coca-Cola has the choice between high fructose corn syrup and sugar as a sweetener in its product. Coca-Cola considers the price differentials or predicted price differentials over a five-year period when making their contracting decisions for high fructose corn syrup or sugar. So with something as simple as a sweetener, you can talk about a five-year window over which that company is going to make decisions and make contracts. So they're forward contracting sugar, they're forward contracting high fructose corn syrup. Textiles are largely the same way. So firms will begin to adjust their mix in response to a price, and then that mix will persist for an extended period of time until price differentials recover or are switched significantly enough to justify the move. So that's what we saw in 2011, was a pretty substantial run-up in cotton price, and it scared a lot of textile manufacturers looking at what did they think the long-term price of cotton may be. Turns out that the cotton price came back down, and you can see towards the end here of this period, cotton begins to recover a little bit of its per capita use, but polyester is still on a fairly significant upward trend. If we look at apparel, the end use of apparel, this is in million bales equivalent, and then the top line represents the per capita in pounds. That drop that occurred in 2011, was a 3 pound per person drop in cotton consumption, and it's remained relatively flat since then. It hasn't dropped off in terms of apparel much from that level, but it's dropped off towards the end in 2016, 2017 a little bit. There are a variety of reasons I'll talk about in a minute. But the key here is that when we're looking at apparel end use, apparel is only one segment of that fiber use market. Okay, so apparel is quicker turnover in terms of its people tend to buy clothes much more often than they do, say, home furnishings, which has cotton product in it as well. And so the responsiveness there is a little bit different, or that market is a little bit different than the home textile market would be, but respond to very much or very similar kinds of things. If we look at all fiber apparel, in which includes both man-made and cotton, you know, it recovered a little bit from the financial crisis, but it's still down. Now, what that tells us then, if we look, step back away from this, is that it's not just cotton in apparel that is declining. It's total fibers in apparel that's declining. So when we look at the entire market here, what we see is an overall decline in total fiber use by American households. So it's not just a cotton issue as much as it is a fiber or a demand issue on the demand side. So what do we, you know, how do we look at this, or how do we explain this? If we look at the bale equivalents, which is, you know, we just convert everything to bales because it's easier to keep track of the cotton that way. The bale equivalents of cotton apparel imports, which is where we get most of our cotton, is down 25%. And the bale equivalents of total apparel imports is down 8%. So cotton is certainly a big chunk of that decline, but it's not all of the decline. So total fiber use is declining as well. At the same time, over that same period, consumer spending on apparel is up by 20%. So that means that it's not a result of consumers buying less product. They're buying more units of clothing than they were in 2006, 2007. But what they're doing is they're buying different types of stuff. Retail prices, of course, are up about 6% as well, which is indicative of that that pressure from consumer spending. So this isn't, you know, a lot of people like to step back and say, well, the, you know, the financial crisis, we've not recovered from the financial crisis. And in fact, we've more than recovered from the financial crisis in terms of consumer spending. That doesn't mean we've recovered in terms of overall consumption. So if we look at it, then we can look at specific things in the average weight. Okay, this is where the difference is coming, not from units, but from weight. So if we look at the average weight in a t-shirt is now 11% less than it was in 2006. Knit shirts down 15%. Blue jeans down 12%. I don't know if anybody's bought a pair of blue jeans lately, but they feel like they're paper thin. They're very lightweight compared to what you used to see with a pair of Levi's. You know, that the brand names have come down as well. So what manufacturers did, even though in products that were largely cotton or 100% cotton content, they lightened the fabric weight, so that uses less cotton, and that means that less cotton is being pulled through the system, even for the same unit. So now an average pair of jeans is going to use 12% less cotton than it did before, even though we're buying the same number pair of jeans. Other bottoms, 14%. So if we look at, it's not just a cotton thing. If we look at all the apparel products, man-made products are also getting lighter weight as well. So the manufacturers out there are lightening up the fabric weight on polyester as well as cotton. It's not just a trend related to cotton. So when you look at it, what's happening, you know, does it take an economist to tell you that less fiber is less cost? You know, that if we put less fiber into something, it's going to cost us less, especially when those fibers were getting more expensive. You know, when we went through that period of very high cotton prices, manufacturers were looking for a way to reduce that overall cost of production, and part of that came from reduction in fiber weight. So, you know, there's a notion out there, a lot of people like to argue or like to talk, you know, pundits will say, well, people are they don't prefer cotton like they used to. Well, that's not true. People prefer their cotton. That's why a lot of these fiber manufacturers didn't switch to man-made fibers when the price ran up. They just switched to lighter weight fabrics in order to be able to call it 100% cotton. So shirts don't last as long as they used to. Jeans don't last as long as they used to because the fiber weights are lower. The other part of this is there's been a significant trend towards athletic apparel. So if I look at my students out in my classrooms every day, most of the girls have on yoga pants and a t-shirt and some kind of hat on their head. The boys tend to have on either a t-shirt or some sort of knit shirt and a pair of blue jeans. But that athletic apparel that has been sort of the rage in the market is not a high cotton content apparel. Okay? That most of those fabrics are, if at most, you know, some percentage cotton. I know Eric can remember the day when Under Armour was a major sponsor at Texas Tech, and they came out with the ad campaign that cotton is the enemy. That was not very popular at Texas Tech. The engineers at I think Cotton Incorporated assisted Under Armour developing that charged cotton, which was a blend. So that athletic apparel, though, has moved people away. If we go look at golf shirts and things like that, I love to fly fish. I love to go to the mountains and go fly fishing. And to find a 100% cotton fishing shirt is difficult. You have to really go look for them. Most of them are polyester because they're lightweight, they wick moisture, you know, all those sorts of those fiber attributes that they talk about. But I don't like them. I like a cotton shirt. There are a few manufacturers, but most of this athletic type apparel tends to be man-made fiber. So when we look at those lighter garments, what does that mean? Well, lighter fabrics need finer yarns. You can't have the coarse count yarns in these really lightweight fabrics. And so when we're looking at finer yarns, we're obviously talking about the more expensive end of the cotton quality spectrum. But fiber yarns, or these yarns also need to be long staple because of the construction of the product. Well, as Eric pointed out a moment ago, I can make polyester as long as I want to make polyester. I just cut it to the length I need. I don't have to worry about fiber uniformity or any of these other issues. I can make it have attributes that engineer some attributes in there that I want. If customers or individuals aren't expressing through their demand purchases a demand for the product attributes that come in cotton, then those textile manufacturers are going to respond to that demand. And right now, or at least in the last few years, there's been this demand for this athletic apparel, not for the other kinds of things. And then the polyester doesn't need the extra step. Now, it's not a U.S. phenomenon, although the U.S. is seeing the biggest sort of dip in product weight. This is an index of product weight. Both the Europeans and the Japanese have expressed the same, or at least the purchasing has expressed the same demand for lighter weight fabrics as well. So, this isn't just our market. This seems to be a trend that is occurring globally in terms of what people want in these kinds of fabrics. The interesting thing as an economist, we talk about these kinds of things, demand expression. One of the issues I have with data like this and attributing it to demand expression is that oftentimes consumers don't have a choice in the market. So when you go to the store and there's not a 100% cotton fishing shirt, how can I express a demand for a 100% cotton fishing shirt? So I can't, it's not like me going to the manager of the store and saying, hey, I'd like a 100% cotton shirt. I can do that, But that one, you know, one or two people putting that information in the supply chain is not going to get a company to suddenly create a whole new supply chain for 100% cotton shirt. So, you know, a lot of this is based on the perceptions of textile manufacturers or retailers in particular. So the retailers and the fashion designers drive a lot of these trends by, you know, picking product, making product choices about certain things. I know at Lubbock, at Tech, we have a big week of cotton at, you know, it culminates in a football game that celebrates cotton and that sort of stuff. But one of the things that's an element in that is a cotton fashion show. So, you know, everything in this thing is a cotton show, designers, you know, and that sort of stuff. It's those people, it's the retail buyers and the designers that drive a lot of these decisions as much as it is the consumers. Although if we all demanded 100% cotton clothing, you know, then retailers will respond. It's not like they completely ignore us, but in absence of any other information, that's not what they're going to do. Now, so talking a little bit about income again, does income influence the choices that we make? So here what I have are the per capita income levels in China, in India, and the U.S. So the U.S. is the gray line, the steady increasing. China doesn't have a higher per capita income. It's on a different scale over there. It's the only way to get it to match up. But you could see what's happened in China, especially in the last 20 years. Per capita incomes have accelerated tremendously. So what does that tell us? Well, a couple of studies, one of the ones that we did, looked at the income elasticity, which is basically the responsiveness of demand to our income. And that mean what our research showed is that about a 10% rise in income in China results in about a 5 to 9% rise in cotton textile consumption. So in other words, they're fairly responsive in their cotton demand to rises in income. This is fairly consistent. Another a little bit more dated study, but in the same sort of range, showed the same kind of effect in India. So 1 to 2. Or 10% rise is a 12 to 17% rise. That's probably a little bit lower now, but still in that 5 to 10% range as our incomes rise indicate people prefer cotton when their incomes are rising in general. So as the rest of the world's income rises, we would expect to see more cotton consumption occur globally. Now, the problem with that assumption is, one, the Chinese government doesn't allow market-based decisions to necessarily be made. They're making decisions based on area planted that they feel like they need to meet things like self-sufficiency goals. Self-sufficiency is a pretty stupid concept when you're a country the size of China, but they make decisions that they would rather see an additional acre of corn go in than an additional acre of cotton. So the ability to meet that demand isn't necessarily there. So what they do is potentially use polyester as a substitute fiber in the consumer supply chain. And China usually maintains about 30 to 35% excess capacity in polyester production. So any day of the week, they can flip a switch on and they can increase the amount of polyester that comes out in their supply chain. That's tremendous. I mean, because textiles are largely a volume-based, low-margin industry. So the fact that the Chinese will subsidize their polyester production at that level implies that they would prefer to see excess demand occurring in the form of polyester, not cotton. That does not fit with their long-term goals for food production. So, you know, yes, these developing countries are likely to increase demand for natural fibers. There's a preference in those populations expressed in the product that they buy for natural fibers, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be matched at the end of the day with government policy that supports natural fiber consumption over man-made fiber. Now, in the U.S., I'd say not so much. When we look at rises in per capita income, there are many, many other factors that are influencing our choices than our income. In other words, we're just not very responsive to income. We're pretty saturated in clothing. Okay? So we tend to be a little more sensitive on other issues. That price increase had a big impact. You know, when the price rose and we saw that sort of little bit of a dip in per capita income occur, we saw a pretty substantial shift from natural fibers to man-made fibers in the U.S. market. Again, total fiber is suffering as well, but the weight of the fabrics, not the blend between cotton and fiber, cotton and man-made fiber. But we do know that American consumers do like cotton products, and there are a number of things out there. So, what are we talking about? Shifting demographics, you know, aging baby boomers and my generation, the Gen X generation, have slowed their overall consumption rates. It's not just that they're switching, they've slowed their overall consumption rates. Many of them, you know, the older Gen Xers and the baby boomers were retiring or nearing retirement when the financial crisis hit. That has not necessarily recovered, so their consumption levels haven't recovered. It's a natural generational shift. Millennials seem to have greater price sensitivity. They are a little more concerned about price, mainly probably because a chunk of them are living in their parents' basement playing video games. But they seem to be more price conscious than the older generation is. Part of that is differences in income, but part of it is also a preference. If you look at, they don't buy homes either. Millennials aren't buying houses. They prefer to spend their money on travel and other kinds of things. So there's a little bit of a generational shift here that's causing some complications. So that less household creation also means less household textiles. If you don't buy houses, big houses, you don't need towels and sheets and all that other stuff for those bigger houses. Supply chain prices are sticky. So even as cotton prices moderated, we didn't see the big shift. So that's where we were at. It's beginning to recover market share, but it takes time because those supply chains are a bit sticky. So just a couple of little other natural products, hemp. It's actually growing in popularity. Hemp fiber is, there's a lot of information being touted about water efficiency of hemp and, you know, some other things. It's largely a very small niche market at this point, but it is an alternative product, an alternative source of fiber that is projected to grow pretty substantially in percentage terms, but not necessarily in volume terms, because it's starting from a pretty small volume to begin with. Wool and flax and silk and the other kinds of natural fibers, flat. It's completely flat. There's just no change in consumption on a per capita basis. Now, total consumption is rising because population is rising, but the per person consumption is not changing. So that share that these natural fibers have of that market is flat or declining, whereas the share of the market to man-made fibers has been growing. So interestingly, I'm gonna set up the next talk here. There are a number of issues out there that are related to environmental. The microfiber is obviously going to be a big one, I think. And millennials also are more concerned about these issues than they tend to be about other things. Okay? So they have environmental concerns. They have these other kinds of marketing or market determinations. So how do we evolve? Well, factors such as sustainability, environmental impact, natural, those are all key terms. People identify them as important in the literature, both the scientific literature and the marketing outcomes. So this was an article on bamboo textiles and, you know, environmental impact of bamboo and that sort of stuff as an example. Those things are typically associated with more affluent consumers. So we're not talking, you know, people in the developing world, people in India are not concerned about the sustainability of cotton production. That's not a marketing element that's going to get them to switch from one product to the other. They're looking for price and other attributes. Whereas American and European consumers tend to be more concerned about these other factors, you know, the environmental impact, that sort of thing. So the bulk remains price conscious, so price is going to matter, but these other fiber attributes and these other environmental attributes are going to be important. So again, just to wrap this up, we've seen significant declines. Part of that's demographics, part of it's price, part of it's other things. But this is, it's also a universal feature that we're consuming fewer fibers. Okay, so it's not just cotton, it's we're consuming fewer fibers in general. These sort of environmental concerns are probably offer us a pathway to reshift the allocation that consumers, the microfiber thing I think is going to be big. It's already caught on with a lot of companies like Patagonia and some of these other places, and so it's one of these that's probably going to be big. But we have a much broader set of natural fibers now than we used to, at least commercially. And so you're going to start seeing people be a little more picky about what natural fiber they're consuming. I mean, you know, you do have bamboo, you do have hemp, you do have cotton, you do have wool fibers, all these sorts of things. Developing countries are going to increase demand for natural fibers as their incomes rise. The nice thing about that for cotton, cotton production is that there are a lot of those people in developing countries. So as their share rises, the total volume is going to rise as well. So we're going to have some challenges agronomically to try to keep up with that production. Right now, we have no problem. We're way ahead of the world. We produce enough cotton. That's why we have 60-cent price instead of 80-cent price. And finally, some of the technological developments. I know Eric's group at Tech and others are working on fiber properties at Cotton Incorporated as well that will make hopefully make natural fibers like cotton more consistent with these man-made fibers in terms of the fiber attributes that you can get, dyeability, you know, all these other kinds of things. So I think these are all opportunities for us from an economist's point of view. So I will turn it over and we'll start talking about environmental things.
Thank you, sir.